on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Wednesday, June 18th, 2025. And although it's a short week in terms of trading, only four trading days this week, it doesn't mean that there isn't news to digest, news to understand, moves to be made. A lot of things happening around the world geopolitically, economically, at home and abroad. And so our job as investors is to try and take this information and try and understand how it affects the world, how it affects markets, and therefore how it affects each and every one of us. Now here at Invest Talk, we think we are a small part of that mission. We bring you stories, we bring you actionable items, we bring you educational material day in and day out. But most importantly, we want to answer the questions that are top of mind for you via your voicemails, your live calls, over there on our YouTube channel, in our iTunes review section, via email from HubSpot. Any way you give us the question, we will answer it. And so because that is the main point of our show, to answer your finance and investment questions, before we talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics, let's tackle our first question now.
Hi, this is Brian from San Jose. I have a long position in Primerica, ticker symbol PR. You know, it's got a pullback, so I'm wondering if I should sell it now. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Primerica, it is a financial services company. It does insurance and investment product sales. Their term life insurance is about 57% of their revenue. Investment and savings segment is about 34% of the revenue. Now, year to date, it's down about 4%. Past 3 months, down 9.53%. And over the past 52 weeks, it is up 10%. Now, looking at earnings, didn't look too bad. 9% year-over-year growth as of Q1 2025. They've been repurchasing shares. They have a pretty solid and consistent dividend, which floats between, looks like 1.2 and 1.6%. And from a debt perspective, right, this is a $8 billion market cap company. They don't have too much long-term debt, only about $2 billion, $1.955 billion in debt. Take a look at the growth of net interest income. Well, pretty solid growth, though it is projected to dip into next year. Earnings per share in 2024 looks like actually negative. Now, I'm sorry, it's growth. Apologies. Their earnings per share was not negative, but they did earn less per share than they did in 2023. From a relative valuation perspective, looking pretty cheap, trading at 11.8 times forward-looking earnings. But I think a lot of their growth is coming from some robust growth in client investment assets. And so the question is, does that momentum stand? We've seen a lot of investment managers be hit pretty hard recently because, again, that dual compression of fees and also assets being taken off the table towards the side. Now, for this company, you know, frankly, I think that the overall growth in revenue, net earned interest, and net income has really slowed, right? It was in the tens, up at 9% in 2019, 12% in 2020, 13.5% in 2021, really gone down into the low single digits, projected to be 5.2% this year. So with growth slowing, with bottom line growth slowing as well, I don't know. I think there are better opportunities out there. And maybe this name is cheap for a reason. So for Primerica, ticker PRI, going to have to pass. Thanks for the call. Alrighty. We have some important things to bring you today over the next 45 minutes or so. The first topic is our main focus point. It's about retirees. Most importantly, how retirees fear for the future of Social Security amid policy and economic uncertainty. Growing anxiety among retirees over potential Social Security cuts and economic instability is prompting many to scale back spending and reconsider their retirement plans as policymakers debate the program's future. Also touch on on Wall Street, they love to coin phrases or acronyms to describe something. And recently, the one that has really been hitting home is that nothing ever happens. And with all the changes and all the craziness going on in the world, markets are kind of just shrugging it off. So we'll go into a discussion of that, as well as recent legislation that passed, stablecoin legislation that passed the Senate. There's an argument that if you have stablecoins that are backed by treasuries, it will boost treasury demand. Let's dive into that and talk about all the other potential consequences. And once again, if we have time, we'll try and tackle that political story and give you a reason why you shouldn't let your politics bleed over into your investing. We also have some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on AT&T Inc. and retirement savings plans, as well as a question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel, and of course, hopefully, a question from one of you out there live over the next 50 minutes. Now we're headed into break. I welcome your finance and investment questions now. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. The calls are free, the unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through live anytime in the next 40 minutes or so, let's say. Before we get to any more questions, let's talk a little bit about the market performance. U.S. stocks, pretty mixed. It was choppy overall, ending a bit off of their best levels. It was down, it was up, it was all over the place. Dow finishing down 10 basis points on the day. S&P 500 down 3, so pretty flat on the day. NASDAQ up 13, Russell 2000 up 52. Leaders in the market, crypto companies doing well on the back of that legislation that I mentioned, banks, investment banks, cruise lines, building materials companies, big tech, mostly higher with Tesla the best performer out of that group. Relative underperformers included payment processors, energy names, department stores, athletic apparel, and chemicals. Treasuries little changed across the curve. Dollar index was up about 10 basis points on the day. Gold finished marginally higher. Fractionally higher, so not much movement there. Crude oil looks like settled up 30 basis points amidst a constantly in flux situation. Overall, no big directional drivers in play. Market remained pretty focused on those Mideast tensions. And the big question, whether or not the U.S. military will ultimately get involved directly in the conflict. The president not really providing much additional insight following his hawkish shift that we saw on Tuesday. On the Fed front, largely a non-event. Policy unchanged. Some mixed takeaways. The dot plot update did show still two rate cuts. Powell in his press conference did flag near-term uncertainty surrounding tariff impacts. But these are all things that we've seen pretty consistently out of the Fed recently. On the trade front, not a lot of traction out of the G7 for positive movements there. And fiscal policy still really seems to be more noise than news, right? You're seeing expectedly the timeline for reconciliation slipping away. Originally, the White House wanted the Senate's reconciliation bill by July 4th. It's a couple weeks away, and it seems as though they might not hit that deadline. From the dot plot, though, in spite of the two rate cuts still on the books for 2025, again, this is just a projection, 2026 and 2027 saw a hawkish shift. On the macro front, initial jobless claims of 245,000, down from the upwardly revised 250,000 last month, though a bit better than the consensus, which was 250 this month. Continuing claims. Remember, we had a big number last month, 1.951 million. It was the highest since November of 2021. Well, the number fell back down to about 1.945 million, a bit above consensus of 1.94. May housing starts down 9.8% month over month, the lowest since May 2020. Building permits down 2% month over month, lowest since June 2020. So a lot of not great economic data that we have seen recently. A lot of deterioration. Reminder, U.S. markets will be closed tomorrow, so we will be doing a best of show. And rounding out the week from a data perspective is the Philadelphia Fed manufacturing for June, which we will see on Friday. All right, let's tackle a question from the InvestTalk YouTube channel from our friend and loyal viewer, Eva Cook. While you're over there, if you prefer to watch our videos or you just like to watch it as well as listening to our podcasts, if you have a question, you can just leave it in the investment or in the comment section of our InvestTalk YouTube channel. It is just InvestTalk with two T's. This question is about Samsara, ticker IOT. It says, I've been watching Samsara for a while and was thinking it might be a good time to invest. What do you guys think? Well, Samsara is a relatively new company. It's a cloud-connected platform company for industrial and enterprise clients. It was founded in 2015, and since then, it has risen to about $22.8 billion in market cap and had phenomenal revenue growth, growing from $110 million in revenue in 2020 projected to be $1.5 billion in revenue this year, logged $1.24 billion last year. From a performance perspective, although it's up 30% in the past 52 weeks, it's down 11.4% year to date, probably because as you've seen tech pull back broadly across the year and especially in pockets, companies that don't make money are going to be more affected by this. This company has yet to make money in its trading history, though you see from this net margin, it's marching in the right direction, possibly being positive for the first time in fiscal year 2026, which for them ends in January. But they have had a lot of slowdown. In spite of this movement towards profitability, revenue growth has slowed down pretty significantly compared to what they saw in the earlier part of the past 6 years. You also have some valuation dynamics that are not very favorable right here. Forward-looking price earnings, 86.5 times, you know, below its average at the low, but still very high. Price to cash flow, 135 times. Price to sales, 16.2 times. Very, very, very expensive. You know, recently they did reinforce their guidance, but in spite of this, in an environment where rates may be sticky upward, where if tech does continue to have a rotation out of it, companies that don't make money, newer companies are going to suffer the most. I think there's a lot of excess risk in investing in a name like Samsara. They might have a bright future, but I think it is better to be invested elsewhere within the tech space, a more established company that can stomach some of the volatility that we should expect to see in the second half of this year. That is Samsara, ticker IOT. Thanks for watching, and thank you for leaving a question on the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Alrighty, let's try and play this question and tackle it when we come back from the break.
Hi, this is Van from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I'm wondering what you guys are thinking about the old Apache. It's an oil company. It's now called APA. Thank you very much. Love your show.
Alrighty, so the question is about APA Corporation. It is an integrated oil company out of the United Kingdom, I believe. No, most of their oil comes from the U.S., Egypt, and the United Kingdom. Sometimes it's difficult to read. Previously, it was Apache Oil. And when we come back from the break, we will dive all into this company and figure out if it makes sense for your portfolio. Moving into a break, still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions and answer to this question, and hopefully some live calls. I encourage you to call right now, 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, we got a question from a caller about a company formerly known as Apache, which is now APA Corporation. It's an integrated oil company. They operate in the United States, primarily where most of the revenue comes from. They also operate in Egypt and the North Sea. Now, this company has had a rough time as of late, certainly on a downward trend since July. It's underperformed its industry every year going back to 2023, including this year. Over the past 52 weeks, it's down 27.46%. And in spite of a little bit of a rise from the lows at 15, and really in the past couple days from about $16.50 to where it is now at about $20 a share, it did benefit from a rise in tensions, but it's still lagging a lot of its competitors. And so I can understand, maybe you're looking at this name and saying, okay, well, it's trading at 7.5 times forward-looking earnings. Should this be a name that I get into? But even though it has pretty decent cash flow, even though it has been buying back shares pretty consistently over the past couple years and does pay a 4.8% dividend yield, it has quite a bit of debt, $5.4 billion in debt on about an $8 billion market cap company. It also has about 10.4% short interest out there. And so the market is telling you, well, you know, it's had a rough time, but we think this company is probably worth even less than it is right now. It is, like any other oil company, like any other energy company, going to have revenues that ebb and flow with the commodity that it is exposed to, in this case, oil. And you see that in its margins, right? In 2019, 2020, lost a lot of money. In 2021, started making money again. Real peak in 22 and 23, back down to about 13.8% this year. Revenue all over the place. For me, in an environment where you have a lot of push and pull here, you have lower demand, you have supply that may be lower than what a lot of people thought, but still, the IEA is saying that there's going to be an oversupply of oil in 2025. And then you have on the other side, rising tensions that could push oil prices higher. Because of that volatility, I would rather be invested in a more globally diverse, certainly one that stays a little bit more out of the Middle East, more globally diverse, larger company that has a lot less debt on its balance sheet. So I think I tend to agree with the market here, with the shorts out here, that I would not want to get into APA Corporation, ticker APA, even though the forward-looking price earnings looks juicy, sometimes is a reason why things are cheaper. Alrighty, my main focus point today concerns an important headline, right? About fear for retirees for the future of Social Security amid policy and economic uncertainty. Now, there are rumblings that the Social Security Trust Fund may only last until 2035, and retirees right now are facing longer waits when they're trying to contact the Social Security Administration over benefit levels. A group led by Republican Representative Nicole Miliotakis criticized the Social Security Administration's service cuts that came from the White House and DOGE, because what it has done is it has increased the average wait time for seniors who are seeking help to receive their benefits to over 86 minutes. And in spite of the fact that a lot of people have had, some people have had checks delayed, some people are worried, like I said, about the trust fund running out, though I am not the oldest of people, but still every 10 years seem to hear somebody telling me Social Security trust fund's going to run out. Regardless, because of these trends, because of rising inflation, many seniors are spending less dining out and entertainment. They're spending less on entertainment and trying to brace for this reduced support. Another problem is that for seniors, borrowing is still expensive. Now, yes, mortgage rates are still above or close to 7%, though most people don't have 7% mortgages. I think the average mortgage rate is in the low fours. If you take on debt, personal loans, credit cards, with the Fed maintaining rates at 4.25 to 4.50, rates are still pretty high on a credit card perspective, as much as 30%, depending on how quote-unquote creditworthy you are. And so seniors have it coming from multiple angles. Higher cost of debt financing, potentially lower income from the Social Security benefits side. Now, for those of you who are thinking about, as seniors, how you can manage your assets, understand that the most important part of the calculation for you in this time in your life isn't about capital appreciation. It's about capital preservation. It's about not just maintaining the money you have, but maintaining its spending power. If inflation ticks up, that just increases the benefit of shifting more of that allocation from traditional bonds towards those treasury inflation protected securities, maybe a little bit more equity exposure as well. Understand that obviously the best way to get around some of the shortfalls that many seniors face is to save as much as you can, as early as you can, and don't touch it and let it be. But understand the reality of the situation that you're in. Understand you're not the only person facing some of these issues. And hopefully, in some ways, you can benefit from understanding how you can move your portfolio to better fit your needs. Now, tomorrow is Thursday and it is Juneteenth, a federal holiday, so the stock market will be closed. But have no fear, we have put together a fresh compilation show, a Best of Caller Questions podcast. Look for that to be posted on investtalk.com, and we will be back here on Friday.
...2025 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, my name is Peter from Columbus, Ohio. Hey, I appreciate the show. Just calling to get your opinion on AT&T as a just like a long hold. I used to listen to the show quite a bit. I haven't listened in probably a year, so I'm getting back into it. I apologize if you've answered this recently. I'm just going through a backlog, but really I just want to have some, you know, all my spare money. I've got all my retirement stuff maxed out, IRAs, 401ks and stuff. So I just want to put some extra cash in something that's long, pretty safe, obviously a bunch of stocks, not just AT&T. So I'm just looking at this as one of them. So its symbol is T, AT&T. Appreciate it. Thanks.
AT&T is a household name. It's one of the largest global telecommunications companies in the world. It is a very, very large company. It's got about $200 billion market cap, but it also has a lot of debt, $143 billion in debt. Its cash flow, pretty solid, but hasn't really been growing much in recent years, and its profitability has been ebbing and flowing from positive to negative over the past 6 years. Supposed to hit a post-pandemic high of about 12.5% net margin this year. Its forward-looking earnings, about 12.8 times, is near the upper end of its five-year range. And that's because over the past 52 weeks, it's up 53.24%. One of the reasons why it's up 53.24%, well, they've made some pretty good progress towards their goal of massive deployment of fiber networks. They also added 324,000 postpaid phones and 261,000 AT&T fiber new net subscribers in the most recent quarter. Revenue and EPS in line with expectations, and announced a $3 billion share repurchase program, which is great because the trend has really been the opposite direction. Slight issuance of shares since 2021. Now, they do pay a dividend, about 4% is where it has been on average throughout the year. Right now it stands about 8.2%. And you know what you're seeing here is hopefully the reversal of a trend, right? They did have a high in 2019, and it's been downward, 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 downward ever since in terms of revenue, their big growth strategy, again, laying those fiber lines. And you've also seen a lot of people leave both AT&T and Verizon. Their margins, like I said, projected to be 12.5% this year. Again, here's this net operating cash flow for you. Like I said, similar range, very stable, free cash flow, headed in the opposite direction as well. So with this name, I mean, from a momentum perspective, it has some pretty strong momentum over the past year, really just straight up, but it's lost a lot of its speed once it hit that 28-30 level just a couple weeks ago. And so my issue with AT&T is really from the leverage, right? They have a leverage ratio that's about 1.4 times higher than the industry average. So a lot of debt. Telecom companies typically do have a lot of debt. And the question is, you know, how much fiscal support will there be for updated U.S. telecommunications infrastructure, right? They're not the only ones that are footing these projects. And so generally speaking, I think that there are better opportunities in the telecommunications sector than telecom companies, because they tend to be incredibly levered businesses. Their margins tend to be all over the place because of it. And for a lot of them, for a lot of these big carriers, they're losing market share. I like where they're going in terms of laying that fiber, but I just think there are better places to put your money. So I'm going to say, excuse me, for AT&T, going to have to pass. All righty, let's keep things moving, and play another question.
I wanted to know what you guys thought about Google's current valuation. I added Google to my portfolio when it was down, and I wanted to keep adding more. Just a little information on me. I'm only 28, so Google would be a long-term hold in my portfolio. Can't wait to hear you guys answer this on the podcast. Thank you.
All righty, let's take a look at Google. Obviously, Google renamed themselves the holding company Alphabet years and years and years ago. It is one of the largest companies on planet Earth. Where does it stand as of today? About $2.142 trillion. And it's had a rough year so far, down 8.44% year to date. One of the things that has been propelling it, though, over the past couple years, right, with that solid outperformance relative to the S&P 500 in 2023 and 2024, is that AI secular growth theme, optimism around artificial intelligence. They've also had some pretty solid banking partnerships, but at the same time, right, you do have also some regulatory lawsuit overhang from an antitrust perspective. AI adoption within Gemini too, I think, hasn't been as robust as what you've seen with OpenAI. And within the tech sector, it really is a first-to-market type of business. Now, they do have a buyback program that has been pretty strong, about a $70 billion buyback program. And unlike some tech companies, they've been pretty consistent with their dividends over the past couple years. From a relative valuation perspective, it's also one of the cheaper names right now, trading at 17.9 times forward-looking earnings, below an average of 22.2 times forward-looking earnings. You know, they still do have dominant ad revenue. They still have pretty fast-growing cloud infrastructure business. Their AI service is strong. They had strong outperformance in Q1. Google's one of those names that I think has been strong for years and likely will continue to be a fixture for years to come. My big problem with Google from a thematic investing perspective is I have fully replaced Googling something with using ChatGPT or any of these other large language models that I think do a far more efficient job of finding my answer for me. So what is that going to do for ad revenue into the future as those tools become more ubiquitous? Within the Mag 7, I still think it's in the top half of Mag 7 names. But I would wait to see what quarterly revenue looks like in July before I bought into this thing. Wait to see what guidance looks like as well. I'm really keen to see what has happened with ad revenue growth over the past quarter as these LLMs become more adopted. That is Alphabet or Google. Thanks for the call. Alrighty. One of the sayings that has swept across markets is that nothing ever really happens. On June 13th, markets initially dropped about 1.6% on rising Middle East tensions, but guess what? They recovered. If you recall, there was a market drop-off after Liberation Day, but guess what? Markets recovered. You had India and Pakistan clashing. That caused pretty much no impact on U.S. markets at all. You had the Wagner mutiny. Remember that all the way back then? When they were marching towards Moscow, driving towards Moscow? A little bit of a dip, then nothing happened. You had China protests. Markets were just shrugging them off. And one of the reasons why is because retail investors have been net buyers of around $20 billion in stocks, billion with a B, over the past 3 months. And this isn't just a trend recently. You can go back to a study in 1988, MIT and Harvard found that major world events typically caused only modest increases in stock volatility in the medium term. Markets tend to struggle to price all or nothing geopolitical risks like nuclear war, often opting to ignore them entirely. One other thing that may be helping out in this instance is really the growth from 2018 and onward in terms of the US's production of energy, production of natural gas, production of oil. We aren't as worried as we were, let's say, in the 70s or the 80s of issues in the Middle East because the US is the largest producer of these energies. Another reason could be because people are generally just worried more about earnings growth than anything else. Understanding that markets typically shake off these things, that this is one of the reasons why investing for the long term and holding through these things is of the most benefit to investors, has allowed investors to continue to shrug them off. Now, there's a difference between that and what we're seeing geopolitically and what we're seeing economically, right? Tariffs, real economic changes do potentially pose a big threat to markets. Why? Because they affect the thing that I just mentioned, bottom line earnings for companies. But it's important to understand that as you get anxiety, as you get nervous, uncomfortable about some of the geopolitics and geopolitical things happening around us, understand what drives markets. So long as retail investors are willing to continue to be net buyers of billions and billions and billions of shares, that type of market structure will continue to float markets through all of this geopolitical uncertainty. All right, here comes another question, this time from a listener in Tennessee.
This is Tommy from Nashville. Love your program. I really wanted to ask, my employer recently started offering a Roth 401k, and they've always offered a traditional 401k, which I've been contributing to. My question is, should I start to transfer my funds into my Roth 401k, or should I leave it in my traditional? I still do have a Roth IRA that I've been contributing to and maxing out every year. So any advice that you guys would have in this, I would be grateful for. Thank you so much. Love your program. You guys have a great day.
Okay, so you can't really just directly transfer your money from your traditional 401k directly into your Roth 401k. You would need to do something called an in-service, in-plan Roth conversion. But like a traditional or a typical Roth conversion, there are some tax implications. So because traditional IRAs, traditional 401k plans are tax deferred, right? They are pre-tax contributions. If you are doing this rollover, you have to pay taxes on the earned income in the account in the year that you are doing this rollover. And, you know, this can be beneficial sometimes, but sometimes it can push you into a higher tax bracket. You can actually end up paying more in taxes and have a higher tax burden because you decide to do this. I think this is one of the main confusion points for a lot of people is not understanding the math of this. If tax rates are the same, right? If your tax rate's 10% and you have $100, and you're going to see a 100% return. Let's say you pay the taxes up front. Well, your $10 or your $100 turned into $90. 100% return makes it 180. Okay. Let's say you pay taxes on the back end. Well, you're $100, 100% return is 200. Then you pay 10% tax on that. That's 20. You get 180. If tax rates are the same and the return is the same, a Roth and a traditional account would have the exact same return. And I don't think people understand that. The only way it is beneficial is if the tax rate is lower. If the tax rate is lower. If the tax rate has differences, that is where the benefits come from. And so you only want to do that conversion into that tax-free growth if you have the ability to take advantage of lower tax rates at the time at which you're doing the conversion. If this is your situation, if you have a low tax year on the horizon, if you think that your tax rate is going to be lower than it is in the future, then yes, it would make sense to try and do this in-service rollover. The next step would be to talk to your plan administrator, but understand the real cost here is the tax difference. Dial that in before you make a decision. Thanks for the call. All righty, we got some time, so let's roll in another caller question now.
Well, I appreciate your show very much. I learned a lot from it. I was wondering if you gentlemen could comment on Capital Federal Savings, ticker symbol CFFN. They're located here in Topeka. Whether or not you think they are currently a buy, a sell, or a hold, what would be your recommendation on that? And then maybe comment a little bit about the regional banking sector as a whole. I think those would be very instructive for me. So thank you very much.
All right. CFFN is Capital Federated Financial. It operates through its flagship Capital Federal Savings Bank. Not a lot of revenue, right? Only $29.6 million in revenue. So it is a very, very small bank, about $767 million market cap with quite a bit of debt, $2.1 billion in debt. Am I reading that correctly? Yes, I am. So, you know, broadly speaking, one of the issues why this bank has flatly underperformed relative to the S&P 500 over the past 5-6 years, and why it's underperformed its industry in 2021, 2022, 2023, is because there are additional risks with regional banks and concentration. And that's why I would have to say that, you know, we are still staying away from regional banks. You have a situation where the long end of the curve is misbehaving, if you will. Yields are very volatile in a way that they typically are not. And so understanding that you have loans on books of banks and rate changes, should they have to sell those bonds in order to fund redemptions of deposits, can negatively affect balance sheets of banks, right? Think about what happened in the banking crisis in 2023. Understanding that regional banks are asymmetrically exposed to this, and that in times of economic uncertainty, yes, you can have higher returns for them, but they carry higher risks, leads me to stay away from banks, especially ones that are this small, regional banks, especially ones that are this small, under $1 billion, very small revenue, low depositor base, low asset base, meaning that they don't have as much oversight as some of these larger banks. So given the climate, I would likely stay away from Capital Federal Financial Inc., as well as other regional banks, tilt towards those larger banks in times of bond rate volatility. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now. 888-99-CHART is the number, and don't forget to cruise over to the new InvestTalk store. It's open now at investtalkstore.com.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we have a live call. Let's go to Tirth in San Jose. You have a question about your 401k?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I recently changed my job, and I have 401k with my old employer, which I want to roll over. So I wanted to get information like what would be a better option between like traditional IRA or Roth IRA. And like I'm also happy to answer like any relevant information from my side which can help with this decision. So like I'm 30. I don't need that money for like long time. I do expect to get in like higher tax brackets as I move forward in my career. But yeah, and I have like 5 years worth of like 401k amount in my like old account.
Okay. Yeah. So the first thing I would do is I would want to roll it over into a traditional IRA probably nearly immediately. And the reason why is because when you keep something in a 401k account, you are playing you could be paying a plan fee, right? Sometimes companies swallow those fees. Sometimes they don't swallow those fees, but they tend to be more expensive and your options tend to be far more limited. Now, if you wanted to do a Roth conversion, you don't have to convert to the full amount all at once, right? And so one of the strategies for converting from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA is to only do it as much each year such that you don't push yourself into a higher tax bracket. And so as we just mentioned, you know, to a previous question, the key here is about minimizing the amount of taxes that you are paying. Mm-hmm. And so for some people, it also makes sense to just keep it in a traditional IRA because they aren't going to be earning any income in retirement. And so they're going to be in a far lower tax bracket. And so, you know, this is a question that is very person specific that you would likely be best advised to consult with a tax professional who can look at your full situation and give you some options. It's something we do for our clients at KPP, but we need to see all of their information in front of us. And then we have tools that help us decide the amount and whether or not we're going to delay or do it all immediately. But the first thing I think you want to do is get it out of that 401k into a traditional IRA, give you more investment options, and save you some money potentially from those plan fees. Thanks for the call.
Good. Thank you.
Alrighty. Brief talk about the Senate passed Genius Act to deregulate, or rather regulate, apologies, a little slip there, stablecoins and clarify reserve requirements. Stablecoins, it says, must be backed one-to-one by cash or treasuries maturing in 93 days or less. And Treasury Secretary Bessent is saying, well, if you have to back things by treasuries, this could reduce borrowing costs. It could help our debt because if there's more demand for treasuries, then there is inherently lower rates because you don't have to pay as high a rate because the demand is so much higher. The increased treasury bill demand could let the treasury issue fewer long-term bonds. It could ease pressure on yields on the longer end of the curve, something that they have been particularly concerned about given the action on the longer end. Right now, T-bills are 21% of outstanding treasuries, and analysts are saying that it could rise to up to 25, 26% maybe due to this new demand. Now, there are some companies that are Amazon, Walmart, who have said they wanted to adopt stablecoins. I'm a little less bullish, if you will, on this. One of the reasons why people use credit cards to buy things is because credit card rewards. If you're Amazon and Walmart, yes, you want to issue stablecoins, but it saves you money because you save on the processing fees. But your customers need to be incentivized too. So does it create new rewards programs? Who really knows? Interestingly enough, as of right now, right, the $240 billion stablecoin market, it's mostly used for crypto trading. Again, there are those incentive issues for customers, whether or not they want to use them in those payments. And although maybe it leads to more treasury bill demand, if the system gets proliferates such that it is so widely used, there's nothing to tie them in the future just to stablecoin, or rather just to treasury demand. Because of this, the impact in long-term rates, kind of indirect, kind of uncertain. It could support borrowing cost stability over time, but all of that will be determined as we move forward. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Corner them at your next family function. Show them your phone. Say, this is InvestTalk. We love this show. I love this show. You'll love it too. You can tell them they can get theirs at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. If today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, whether or not you can afford that vacation, and whether it's all really working, it's best to get a financial checkup. Just like going to the doctor, you don't want to wait until things get bad. You should probably do it at least once a year, and we will help you there. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews. So just head over to investtalk.com and click on portfolio review. As a reminder, best of show tomorrow. We will see you back here on Friday. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.